Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. This is John Vecchione, and I'm joined by Mark Chenoweth. And we have a number of administrative law cases from the Supreme Court that they took on an emergency basis and they put out last week. And I'm going to just jump in and start talking about Biden versus Missouri. This was the Medicaid-Medicare vaccine mandate. And let me tell you the posture of the case so that you know it's not a final decision, although I think that for both of these, Mark's going to discuss the OSHA vax mandate case.
Just kidding.
After this. But this is one where the government won. And I think what's going on. So let me just say the federal government. Administers a huge amount of money in Medicare and Medicaid. One takes care of the medical needs of people over 65, and the other is for the indigent. And about 10 million healthcare workers are in facilities that receive these funds.
Hey, John, can we back up 1 second? Because these cases are both on the emergency docket, right?
That's what I'm getting at. Yep.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So I'm explaining the posture of it in that that's why I'm saying it's not final. But here's what happened. The Secretary of Health issued emergency regulations. He said he didn't do notice and comment or any of that. And he said everyone's got to get vaxxed or get fired in any institute that's receiving Medicare or Medicaid funds. Interestingly, there are three exceptions. If you have a valid health exception to the vaccine, if you have a religious exception to the vaccine, or, and this I found interesting, if you are always telecommuting. And a lot of these vaccine mandates, they've just said, we don't care if you're sitting home in your house clicking away, we're still going to mandate this for you. This one is different. For some reason, they actually exempted that if you're a remote worker. And so in any event,
I think because they're claiming patient safety as the reason here. Yeah. And if you're not having any interaction with patients, it's hard to claim patient safety as the rationale for the mandate.
It is, but you know, this is the government. We've seen them do these crazy things where they don't really care what the circumstances is. That's why I'm bringing it up, because it's so unusual. They usually go, we don't care, everybody. But in any event, so the Supreme Court, so an injunction was issued below by the district court, and the Biden administration appealed it up and said we need an emergency reversal of the stay, basically. And the Supreme Court, which has been criticized for just issuing per curiam rulings on these various stays and emergency dockets, had oral argument, and then they issued an opinion. And the opinion here is per curiam. So supposedly you don't know who is on it. But since we know that the dissenters were Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Barrett, they were not on it. Exactly. So it was the other five, which includes Kavanaugh and Roberts. And I
kind of removes the mystery when it's a 5-4 per curiam.
Exactly. And so the vaccine mandate in this case was upheld. And it was upheld. It strikes me very narrowly. What they're not arguing about vaccine mandates here. The two sides are not arguing about that. They're arguing about the amount of specificity Congress has to have before they'll allow a vaccine mandate. So what's happening here is that the majority thought that the laws that had been passed and the regulations that had been used for a long time before COVID were enough, that they thought that this power had been granted to Secretary of Health in these circumstances by Congress. That is a controversial proposition, but it is interesting to me that they purport, at least the per curiam purport, to say that this is part of the language, because there's language that they can regulate against infectious disease. There's language that says that they can take basically necessary and proper regulations for stopping infection in patients. And here is something this turned on that I do not believe is true, but that the court had to accept is true. The health and regulatory, the Secretary of Health had found that unvaccinated people transmit COVID at a higher rate than vaccinated people. I don't know that that's true, but under the standards of the injunction and under the standards that they had to follow, they believed that that was true. And so
I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So you're saying if you have two people who both get COVID, that the unvaccinated person will transmit it more than the vaccinated person? Or
that's
you're saying
that's what they say.
They
don't make it that specific, but they say that the Secretary of Health found, and they cite something saying that here it is, that determinant is based on data showing that the COVID-19 virus can spread rapidly among healthcare workers and from them to patients, and that such spread is more likely when healthcare workers are unvaccinated. I think, and that's one of the first things the per curiam people mention. And this fact, I think, is going to be important forever, because this is not, I don't know that that's true. I think that unlike smallpox, these are not sterilization vaccines, and that certainly with the new variant, it doesn't seem that there's any difference. But
well, at a minimum, that's not taking account of the thousands and thousands and thousands of health workers who have natural immunity because they got COVID in the early days of the epidemic and they survived it and they now have naturally acquired immunity.
They take they say they're not, because that was raised. Natural immunity was raised and they toss it aside. They said the Secretary of Health doesn't think that's working. So we're not saying it's arbitrary and capricious for him to say it's not enough.
I'm just saying that that's something that they might have to take at this stage, but if they go back to the circuit, they might be able to show otherwise.
Right. If these things are not shown to be true, I'm just saying that I don't believe that those two things are true. Certainly they're not proven. But the court had to accept them. And I think that this opinion really turned on that, because the protection of the patients from other people does seem to be what a lot of these regulations and laws are aimed at, as you would expect. And so that's why they're doing it. It's not. So what they said is that the good cause for the emergency was, in short, the Secretary's belief that any further delay would endanger patient health and safety given the spread of the Delta variant and the upcoming winter season. And there is evidence in winter, the COVID spreads more because people are indoors and stuff. So those are not, I don't think those are made up reasons. And the court seemed to say, all right, we'll go with it. And so the per curiam said, yeah, you have this power. And the reason you have this power, they went through the regs and they said, the rules thus fit neatly within the language of the statute. After all, ensuring that providers take steps to avoid transmitting a dangerous virus to their patient is consistent with the fundamental principle of the medical profession, first do no harm. It would be the, quote, very opposite of efficient and effective administration for a facility that's supposed to make people well to make them sick with COVID-19. And they cite the 11th Circuit. So, and they then note that Justice Thomas has a narrower view of what these statutes mean. And then they quote another statute, another section of the regulations based on the statute that they approve of, saying that the programs that hospitals must implement to govern the, quote, surveillance, prevention, and control of infectious diseases. So in any event, they thought the good news is they believe that the statute matters, and they also believe that prior behavior matters. And they say that although they haven't required vaccines before, they have cited the state requirements of vaccines. And they've relied on this. The HHS has relied on for rubella and all these other things that all these healthcare workers have to be vaccinated. And the reason that HHS has never done it is because the states did it and they relied on it. That's what they say. And I think what's going on here is that at least the per curiam judges, what really sets them off is when the agency tries to do a completely new thing that it's never done before. And what they're saying here is, well, they've relied on this state stuff. They've never had to do it because all the states did it. Now, I don't think that's a great argument, but it's at least rational. It's why they're letting them do this new thing. This, what they admit is at least the vaccination part is new. So that is the majority opinion by and large. They also say it's not arbitrary and capricious because they have good reasons for it. And they go out of their way to say that the challenges posed by a global pandemic do not allow a federal agency to exercise power that Congress has not conferred upon it. And so this is a close opinion, it strikes me. And it's interesting. I'm now going to get to the dissents. So the per curiam opinion says, look, here's what we're relying on. One, you can hurt patients because unvaccinated workers transmit it more than other vaccinated workers. The agency had good reason not to believe natural immunity is as good as vaccine. Now, we disagree with that, but they're saying we don't have that expertise. We're going to believe them. And then they said, and these statutes are all directed at health and care of patients. And we think the regulations have for a long time done this sort of thing. So we're going to say, yeah, Congress sent them that power. But the dissents, one by Thomas, which is joined by, oh, we got to go. The question there is, they say very quickly that vaccines have been required by Congress by explicitly for Peace Corps and other things that weren't here without them. We'll come back to those shit. This is a segment on OSHA, but I just want to finish up the two dissents. Thomas, first of all, it is kind of a mild dissent from Thomas. He points out that if they really want to have vaccine mandates and say people have to be vaccinated, Congress knows how to do it because they've actually done it for the Peace Corps. If you join the Peace Corps, Congress has said that the Secretary of Health can require what vaccines you are required to take, and they do it in explicit language. So what Thomas is really exercised about is that, hey, if they want to do this, they got to do it extremely clearly. And so the difference in the majority and the dissent is how clear the mandate to vaccinate has to be. But Alito has one that, for Mark and I's purposes, is a little better because he attacks the administrative state. He says, today, however, most federal laws not made by Congress comes in the form of rules issued by unelected administrators. In order to give individuals and entities who may be seriously impacted by agency rules at least some opportunity to make their views heard and to have them given serious consideration, Congress has clearly required that agencies comply with basic procedural safeguards. And then he says they haven't complied with it. You have just given free rein, and all the agencies are going to be doing this all the time because you've let them. And that's going to be bad for the future, and I dissent. So with that, we can move on to OSHA. But I do think this argument over how specific the Congress has to be is going to be a continuing one in this term and in the foreseeable future.
Well, and it comes up as soon as the OSHA case. So this case is the National Federation of Independent Business versus Department of Labor and Occupational Safety and Health Administration, consolidated with Ohio et al., which is a bunch of other states, versus the Department of Labor and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. This decision was also a per curiam decision, but it went the other way. And here, the United States Supreme Court decided that there should be a stay in place against the OSHA rule while the case is proceeding in the lower courts. And we've talked about this case a little bit before, and you may recall that that cases were filed in every one of the federal circuits challenging the OSHA rule in some form or fashion. There was then a decision by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to stay the OSHA rule. Then there was a lottery that took place that decided that the Sixth Circuit would be the one that would have jurisdiction over the case. When it got to the Sixth Circuit, there were motions to rehear the matter, or to hear the matter initially as an en banc. And then there was an 8-8 vote that denied that request. And then a 2-1 panel decision from the Sixth Circuit lifting the Fifth Circuit's stay. And so that, in terms of posture, is actually what was up to the Supreme Court, is whether or not that 2-1 panel decision from the Sixth Circuit lifting the stay was valid, or whether, in fact, a stay should be kept in place. And the Supreme Court decided that a stay should be kept in place, or rather reinstituted, I guess, since the Sixth Circuit had lifted it. And the reasons for this are interesting, in part because they mirror some of the things that John was just talking about, but they come out the opposite way. So among the factors that are cited in this decision are that OSHA has never before imposed a mandate like this. So arguably, unlike in the CMS context, where there have been at least somewhat similar kinds of things before, OSHA has never done a mandate like this. Here, too, the Supreme Court said that Congress has declined to act. In fact, the only action that Congress has taken was a vote by the Senate, in which a bare majority of the Senate voted a sort of sense of the Senate resolution against the lawfulness of the OSHA mandate. So you had some voice from the legislative branch coming out against this. But then, looking at the statute itself, the Supreme Court said, look, OSHA deals with occupational safety. This is about healthful working conditions, healthful employment conditions. And what you're talking about here aren't the sort of toxic and physically harmful fumes or something like that that's specific in the workplace. You're talking about something that affects everyone, everywhere, all the time, and it's undifferentiated in terms of the effect in the workplace, at least insofar as this rule is concerned. Because the court points out that there was no effort by OSHA to have different rules for, say, folks who might come into close proximity with each other or with the virus, like medics and meat packers are the two businesses that the court mentions. The court also notes that the emergency standard that OSHA issued in this case has only been used 9 times before, that 6 of those times it's been challenged in court, and only one of those times was that power fully upheld. So there's a long history of this sort of OSHA attempt to use emergency power to institute some kind of emergency standard. There's a long history of that being struck down by the federal courts. And here the other thing I think that gets into what John was saying right at the end, the court says that, look, we expect Congress to speak clearly when an agency is being vested with control over a matter that has economic and political significance. And the court has little trouble in finding that this OSHA mandate, which would affect over 80 million people, fits into that category. So the court looks at all those factors and decides that both from the text of OSHA and from the sort of lack of specificity in any kind of congressional action that the OSHA mandate has to go. And again, this is a temporary situation, right? It's just a stay that goes into effect. It could be the case that when this is fully litigated on remand below at the Sixth Circuit, that there would be a different decision. I think that's somewhat unlikely, because this was not quite as divisive a decision as the CMS decision was. And so I think that it's a little more likely that Now, that's not to say that there wasn't a dissent, because Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan did dissent here. But I think that the that's still a 6-3 instead of a 5-4. So we're looking at a little more robust majority in this case than we were in the other. But I think there's something here that's maybe worth pointing out, John, that's from the Gorsuch concurrence in this case, which Justices Thomas and Alito joined him in. And I think it's both interesting that those two join. So he's riding with the voice of three on this point. But it's also interesting that the Chief Justice and Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Barrett did not join him on this point. And that is my reading of the Gorsuch concurrence is he's saying two things. He's saying that there's this doctrine called the major questions doctrine. And what that doctrine says is that in the case of some sort of major question, which the six have already said this counts as a major question, that Congress has to speak, that if Congress hasn't spoken clearly, then the court is not going to assume that that power exists for the agency to act. Now, what Gorsuch goes on to say is, I tried to pull out a good quote that said this explicitly, but it's not quite explicit. But I think the reason he's writing separately is to say, look, this is a negative test. If you can't pass the major questions doctrine sort of test that I was just describing, then that means we're not going to assume that Congress granted the power. However, if Congress did explicitly grant the power, that doesn't automatically mean then it's okay. And he goes on to explain the difference between the major questions doctrine and the non-delegation doctrine, which are sometimes treated as though they're opposite sides of the same coin, or as though they're some sort of a two-part test or something. But what Gorsuch says here is that even if Congress had explicitly ordered this, it might fail as a under the non-delegation test, that you couldn't just tell OSHA, you can go order something against 84 million Americans to receive a vaccine. It's not just that Congress didn't assign that much power to OSHA. If they did assign that much power to OSHA, then you'd have to take a look at that under the non-delegation doctrine. And that's not something that the other three in the majority have signed on to. In fact, what we've seen, John, in other cases, is that Justice Kavanaugh has effectively said, as long as Congress speaks explicitly, then that sort of delegation is okay, even on these major questions. I think that is not consistent with Supreme Court precedent going back to John Marshall, Chief Justice John Marshall. But I think that's where Kavanaugh is. And I'm a little troubled in this case that it looks like Roberts and Barrett might be on the Kavanaugh side of that split rather than with Justices Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito on this.
I'll push
on
back a little bit. I think the one difference is that if they think that they haven't gotten to the point of whether the delegation is just so broad that none of them have touched on that issue, that if the delegation is so broad, then we wouldn't allow that delegation. They've just said that if it is delegated, we'll allow it. That, in other words, they can give a major question as long as they've given enough direction on what you're supposed to do with the major question. I think that's better, at least, than they can give them a major question with no direction.
Yeah, what Gorsuch says is, and this is a quote, the court rightly applies the major questions doctrine and concludes that this lone statutory subsection does not clearly authorize OSHA's mandate. So all six justices in the majority agree with that sort of, as I say, negative test of the major questions doctrine, that the section does not clearly authorize it, and therefore that's enough. You don't have to go further. If it doesn't clearly authorize it, it's not authorized, and the agency can't do it. The question is, what happens next? What if the agency had clearly authorized it? And that's where I fear that there may be a difference between the Gorsuch-Thomas-Alito approach and the approach of the chief in Justices Kavanaugh hearing. But we won't know that for now, but the stay is back in place and the OSHA rule is not in effect. And that's good news for 84 million Americans. We'll be right back.